the bottom. That's nice, yeah. That's good. Well attended?
What?
Well attended?
Yeah.
That's very nice. Okay. Without any further ado, since it's very late, it happens to be time we have some lighter and more interesting stuff, if we can express ourselves that way about the Gemara than we had the last couple of weeks. You have tax collectors who enter into a house. Now, tax collectors, even though they're Jews, they are considered to be defiled. Not because necessarily they collect taxes specifically, rather because the people who collected taxes were considered to be not the creme de la creme of Jewish society, so therefore they, generally speaking, are going to be tummy. So the question is, when they entered your house to seize your chattel, did they defile it and make it tummy? So do gaboim, the collectors which return vessels which have been stolen, taken, seized. They are believed to say that they did not touch certain objects. It says here gaboim, but the Korban Eidah has the girsa in the second case of ganovin, right, thieves, as opposed to collectors. So they're believed to say that this is what they didn't touch. Yerushalayim, now this is outside Jerusalem. In Jerusalem itself, Ne'amani Malakosh, they're even believed on vessels which are already holy. And if it's a yontif, then they gain credibility a la Truma on Truma as well. That's, of course, a lot of information to throw at us when they're believed, where they're believed, and the Gemara is going to try and sort it out a little bit. Hagabayim Shenichlis Lutachabayis, the tax collectors which entered the house, they're assumed to have made it Tomei. Okay? Right off the bat, this is a Mishnah in Masechta Taros elsewhere. No, not like our Mishnah. We're going to reconcile the two. If the Gaboyim enter the house, they are Tomei. They make the house Tomei. It's assumed everything in the house becomes Tomei. If, however, there's even a goy with them. Now, the goy, obviously, is checking on them to make sure they're doing their tax collection properly. But besides that, he also is somewhat of a check on them. In other words, that they're not afraid to lie because the goy might contradict them. So, then they are believed to say we came in and we didn't touch. Pasal train patrick. Now, there are two ways of interpreting that Mishnah in light of our Mishnah. Now, one way is saying to say, Ne'amanim lo manichnas, do they believe to say that we went in avalona ganu, and we didn't touch, and even b'shiyei she'edim yodim, even there are individuals who saw them go in. Now, this is a very interesting concept. I'm really explaining this according to the Ritbaz, who goes into a lot of detail. But there's a concept to which you may be familiar with and may not, called pesha asar pesha yitir, meaning, if you have no way of knowing something except on the basis of what I say, then you have to give me credibility. That's halacha. If I'm the one who tells you something and you don't know anything except by the basis of what I told you, otherwise, you know, you would have come to the house and not realize the tax collectors are there. The only way you realize the tax collectors were there is because they tell you that. So then you are subject to their credibility, both l'chumra and l'kula, both for stringency and for leniency. So that's only true if they're your sole source of information. But if you're not their sole, so they're your sole source of information, because you know from witnesses that he entered the house, so then they do not have that halachic tool of pesha asar pesha yitir. Literally, the mouth that forbids is the mouth that permits. Because they're not the mouth that forbids. We know from other sources that they went in. So that's approach is saying in this resolution of the Mishnah in Taros with our Mishnah over here, that they are believed to say they didn't touch, even if they are not our sole source of information, even though our witnesses who saw them enter the house. Now, that's only, however, on stuff which is not Kodesh, meaning on regular stuff, chulin, mundane stuff. Yerushalayim, Ne'amanim al Kodesh, Yerushalayim, they're believed even on Kodeshim and the holiest stuff. See, in Yerushalayim, even the tax collectors are holier. They're believed on the holy stuff, Apil Yeshayim Yodim, even their witnesses who know. Now, the catch is that outside Yerushalayim, they're not believed on Kodesh. And that's true even if they have a Pesha Asar Pesha Yitir, and even if a goy accompanied them. Okay? In Yerushalayim, they believe on Kodesh, because Yerushalayim is a holier place. But outside Yerushalayim, they're not believed on Kodesh, even if there is a goy with them, which normally gives them credibility because they're afraid to lie in front of the goy, and even if they have a pesha asa, pesha itir, even if they are the sole source for information, they're the ones who tell us they were in there, and they tell us they didn't defile things, nevertheless, we do not accept them, again, because they made a special milah, a special level, higher level for Kodesh. The Kodesh requires a higher degree of certainty, and only in Yerushalayim are they granted credibility. Okay? Now, that's one way of interpreting it. Pasul pasul chorin is another way of interpreting it. Now, money lo ma'echnastu avalona gadnu. Their belief to say, we went and we didn't touch. Lachain sricha. Now, lochein tzricha means it's like lochein tzricha. And this is only necessary to tell us, meaning that we're only mean to tell us this, b'sheyesh edim yodim, when there are witnesses who knew what was going on. Meaning that they're believed to say, we touched, and we granted did not touch, even where there are people who are aware of they're going in. Now, this is talking about outside Yerushalayim. According to the second resolution, they're believed even outside Yerushalayim. Let me read the next line before I go back and explain it. L'chein tzricheish eim yodim, Yerushalayim ne'monim ala kodesh, afo pishyesh eidim yodim. Well, the difference is that in Yerushalayim, where there are witnesses which know. So then, in Yerushalayim, they're still believed. Outside Yerushalayim, they're not believed. Where witnesses know. Meaning that where they're not a sole source of information, outside Yerushalayim, we can't believe them. Oh. But the inference of this second solution is that even outside Yerushalayim, if they are our sole source of information, then they are believed even on Kodesh. So the first solution holds that it makes no difference whether they're a sole source of information or not. Outside Yerushalayim, they're only believed on Chulin, on mundane stuff. In Yerushalayim, they're believed even on Kodesh. According to the second resolution, outside Yerushalayim, they'll also believe on Kodesh, as long as they are so sorts of information. In Yerushalayim, they're believed on Kodesh, even if they are not so sorts of information. Right?
Alright. Believe
that they know, that they entered and did not touch, that they did not make a tummy. Okay? Rishon Levi said, interesting halacha. Yerushalayim, this is a quote from a verse in Tehillim. Yerushalayim habnuya, Yerushalayim is built up ki ir shechubra lo yachdov, like a city which is connected together. Now the way we explain that, a beautiful drasha, ir she osa es kol Yisrael chaverim, it's a city which makes all Jews friends. But friends here does not mean friends in the sense which you're thinking of. Neither does it mean Quakers. It means rather that they are what? Right, a chaver means rather that they're given credibility in matters of tum and tara. Again, Yerushalayim is a special level. People who come to Yerushalayim are considered to be on a special level vis-a-vis tum and tara, not necessarily for mystical reasons, but in essence because people knew in Yerushalayim they had to be more sensitive. It simply was considered to be, you know, the capital of holiness in the Jewish people. What? Status, right, you got it. Me'ata afilu v'shayim osa shana. Oh, so wait a minute, but it said in Yerushalayim, it said in our Mishnah, they believe in Yerushalayim on Kodesh the whole year. But only on Yotif are they believed on Truma. Why only on Yotif? Yerushalayim has this exalted status, let it be the entire year round. So it says to our Rabbi Zira, b'vad v'shah shiyeh sheshama l'shvatim. It's only given, because the Pasuk says, Sheshama olu shvatim shivtei ka edus liyisrael. It says Yerushalayim makes everybody friends at the time when the shvatim, when all the tribes go up to Yerushalayim. So therefore, it's only at the time of the holidays, the pilgrimage festivals, then Yerushalayim has its special level vis-a-vis Truma. The rest of the year it has its special level vis-a-vis Kodesh, but only on Yontif vis-a-vis Truma. Okay, turning the page. Haposeach es chaviso. We're in the home stretch. Haposeach es chaviso, somebody opens his barrel. Famaschu b'isos, when somebody begins with his dough. Agava rego on Yontif. Now, the halacha is, of course, that on Yontif, especially in Yerushalayim, but even the rest of the, even in the rest of the, it seems that the, even in the rest of, not the rest of Eretz Yisrael, but a certain radius, we said, outside Yerushalayim, minamodiyis v'lifnim, from a certain area outside Yerushalayim to Yerushalayim, during times of Yontif, everybody had a status of chaverim, right? We said that everybody had the credibility of chaverim during that period of Yom Tov. So what if you started a barrel of wine on Yom Tov, and of course many people touched it, or even people who the rest of the year you wouldn't grant that level of credibility that they are tar. Or you began it though, and many people touch it. People the rest of you wouldn't grant credibility that they're tar. So now, what happens after Yom Tov? Rabbi Yehuda Meir Igmar, Rabbi Yehuda says you can finish it. Because that which they said, that on Yom Tov, we don't care who touches it, we assume that they're all tar, remains after Yom Tov true as well. The Chomer Mim Lo Igmar, you're not allowed to finish it. So it's a special dispensation only for the days of Yom Tov. And after Yom Tov is over, if you didn't finish your barrel by the end of Yom Tov, that's it, you may not finish the barrel afterwards. Not because people touched it after Yom Tov, but rather because the people touched it on Yom Tov, the dispensation to ignore the possibility that they are tummy ends when Yom Tov ends. Okay? Right, so now it's scriptures. So it says what? Hoyumavirin Bet Mishava Regal, once Yom Tov passes, Hoyumavirin Al Taras Azara, they used to go through the Kohanim in the Beis Hamikdash, they used to go through and ensure the sanctity of all the vessels in the Beis Hamikdash. The Azara literally means the Koyan Beis Hamikdash, and that will actually be described in the next Mishnah when we get there. However, of our regular Yom HaShishi, if Yom Tov finished on Friday, lo yimavir, and they didn't do it because they covered our Shabbos because there's no time to do before Shabbos. Rabbi Yomer af lo biyom chamishi, this is true even if Yom Tov finished on Thursday. Shein HaKohanim Kohanim, because there's no time between Thursday and Friday to get cracking on cleaning up and purifying the Azor. Okay. Rabbi Chas says, when Rabbi Chinam Shem Yochanan said, now he explained the logic of Yudah, says that even after Yom Tov you can finish your barrel which you began on Yom Tov, or your dough which you began on Yom Tov. They permitted the end, meaning after Yom Tov, because of the beginning, because of Yom Tov. Meaning, Shim Oimer at lo shelo yigmor, if you tell me he may not finish his barrel after Yom Tov, afuino poseach, he will not open his barrel on Yom Tov. He won't go and sell the wine to people who potentially might defile it. Says Mora, no, so what's so terrible? Fulo yiftach, let him not open his barrel. Afu memai, says Mora, no, we can't, it's not a solution. Afu memai besimchas haregel, if he doesn't open his barrel, he diminishes the joy of Yom Tov. And since we're all pro-enjoying Yom Tov, so therefore we have to, Rabbi Yehuda's perspective was, that once he begins, we allow him to finish, lest next Yom Tov he doesn't even begin to distribute his wine or his dough, whatever it's talking about. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman b'shem Rabbi Yonason said, "Ma pligin, where's their machlokas? Where's an argument? And where did Rabbi Yehuda give special dispensation to continue with the barrel even after the end of it is over? V'chavis shel yayin, with a barrel of wine. Ava v'chavis shel shemen, but it's a barrel of oil. Kol amamoydei, everybody can see it. Even Rabbi Yehuda she'eno gomer, you may not finish it after the end of it." Now there are a couple of reasons given for this in the commentators. One reason given here by the Gilan and Shas is because wine, if you can't drink it, there's nothing else you can do with it. So therefore they have to let you finish your barrel. But oil, if you can't drink it, you can use it for fuel.
Did they drink oil?
No. It was considered unhealthy to drink oil. Well, I'm saying, this obviously didn't drink it.
They use it as a condiment?
They use it as a condiment, they use it as salad dressing, but they also use it as fuel. So that's what I'm saying, that Rabbi Yehuda would not need to permit the guy to finish his barrel of oil after Yom Tov, because if he couldn't use it for food, for a condiment, he'd just use it for oil, so it's not so terrible. The Mashpiach says in another perspective, he says, the reason why Rabbi Yehuda allows you to finish your barrel of wine, because if you don't finish it, you're not going to open it on Yom Tov, right? And people are going to be deprived of the joy of wine on Yom Tov. However, what's going to happen if we don't allow you to finish your oil after Yom Tov? You won't open your barrel of oil on Yom Tov? So what? Whose joy of Yom Tov is impeded by not having oil? Contrary, the simcha of not having cholesterol, saturated fats, is very great. So therefore, on the cob, we don't care. Let him not open his barrel of oil on Yom Tov. What do we care? Okay? So it says Marketsurosa. This is going back to what Rabbanon would advise you to do. Again, according to Rabbanon, what would you do with the leftover wine? considering that you can't finish it on the weekday following Yontif. So Tanya Reb Chiya learned Shofcha, you spill it. Tanya Bar Kapara Shofra, you break the barrel. It's interesting, these opinions are not brought down in the Bavli. The only opinion brought down in the Bavli is the next one. For Tana, the Rabbi Chalafta, Tana is Rabbi Chalafta Bar Shol, and Rabbi Shol Chalafta Bar Shol holds that Menichol the Regal Haba. You leave it for the next Yom Tov. In other words, they didn't give you dispensation to finish your barrel according to Rabbanon during weekdays, but you can always leave it for the next Yom Tov, and then the dispensation comes back into force. Okay? It's interesting. So it's like Yom Tov is a tumah free zone. And as long as you keep your barrel from Yom Tov to Yom Tov, you're okay. Rabbi Simon Moshe Rishuma Levi said, Yom Tov Shchal Yos Be'er Shabbos. Actually, this is a new paragraph. It's linked, but not so closely to the end of the Mishnah, where we said that the Kohen don't have time to clean up the Hazara if the Yom Tov ends on a Friday. So now this is a parallel issue. So Rav Shmuel Levi said, Yom Tov Shchal Yos Erev Shabbos. If Yom Tov comes out on a Friday, right? In other words, it ends on a Friday, as we said in our Mishnah. Ochel af Ochel, you can eat with the Amoritz, meaning share with the Amoritz your food without worrying about his defiling it, even on the Shabbos, which comes out after Yom Tov. Why? Because Aftishbos HaRegel KaRegel. Interesting language. Also, the cessation of activity because of Yom Tov is like Yom Tov, meaning you're in Yerushalayim for that Shabbos, which you normally would not be because you can't leave. And you came up for the Yom Tov. So therefore, that Shabbos, which you're spending in Yerushalayim, because of Yom Tov, is like Yom Tov itself, and they grant you dispensation. So it works on both sides, of course, as well. If Shabbos comes out of Yom Tov, Shabbos comes out after Yom Tov, so then you have that dispensation of allow, assuming that the Amoretz is Tohar, even on that Shabbos, which is an extension of the Yom Tov. Amrav Zirah said, Masisa Amrakein? We have a Brisa which says this. The Brisa says, I don't know where, but the Brisa says, Erev HaPesach kePesach. The day for Pesach is like Pesach. The Yom HaTfoach, the day after Shavuos, when they used to slaughter the Karbanos, which could not be brought on Shavuos, Katzeres is like Shavuos. Rabbi Chanina Chinah said, Avanan Tnina. Now here's the linkage back to our Mishnah. We also heard the Mishnah, the Rabba. The Rabba means an even greater Chiddush. What's greater Chiddush? Rabbi Yomer, Avlob Yom HaChamishi. They wouldn't even clean the courtyard when Yom Tov ended on a Thursday, because the client didn't have the time. So he wants to infer from our Mishnah that it's not just if Shabbos is immediately adjacent before or after Yom Tov, but even if there's a day interval in between, since there's no time to leave Yerushalayim and get home, so therefore, or no time to get Yerushalayim between Shabbos and Yom Tov, so therefore you have the dispensation of being allowed to eat and enjoy together with the Amoretz for that Shabbos before or after the Yom Tov. Okay, last Mishnah Masechta Chagiga. Ketam Mavirim Al Taras Hazor. How do you how do the Kohanim go and purify the Hazor, the courtyard of the Beis Hamikdash? Matpilim Esakim Shuba Mikdash. They would take all the vessels which were in the Beis Hamikdash and dunk them in a mikvah. Plain simple. Kolkem Shuba Mikdash. All the vessels which were in the Beis Hamikdash, Hoyolim Shni Mushlishim, they had backups and backups and backups to the backups. Okay? Second and third string. Shim Nidmor Rishonim. If the first ones became Tomei, Yavi Yushnim Tachteim, they would bring the second ones in lieu of them, and those who come Tomei, they still another backup. Kol HaKelim Shem Mikdash Yeretunim Tefillah. All the vessels in the Beis Hamikdash would have to be dunked in the mikvah, except for two. Chutz Mizrach Hazav, except for the gold altar, which was the one in which they brought the Kedores, incense, Mizrach HaMechoshes, and the copper altar. Actually, in the Beis Hamikdash itself, they didn't have a copper altar. They had an altar made out of earth, out of cement. But in the Mishkan, they still had a copper altar, and that was those two. The Mizbech HaSov and the Mizbech HaNechoshes, the gold and copper altars, are not have to be put in Mikkah, Neshe and Karka, because they are like they are ground. They're not really the ground. They're separate vessels. But since they're considered to have the status of the ground, the Gemara is going to explain why. Divrei Rabbi Elazar. Say the reason why they do not have to, the reason why they have to, actually the reason why they don't have to go to the mikvah is because they are actually wooden vessels. It happens to be that they're covered with a layer of metal, right? They were what's the word, plated. But the base was wood, and wood does not become tummy unless it has a receptacle. But these did not have a receptacle; they were just wooden blocks. So therefore, and they weren't solid wood, but they were wood nailed together, not meant to hold anything. And there, and coated with metal. So that's why they don't have to; they don't become tummy because they are wooden vessels. Okay, says Mark. You know what? If this desk did not have the drawers, we can become tummy because they're made to hold things. But the rest of the desk would not be tummy because it's a wooden vessel.
I thought vessel, by definition, is something that
can hold. No. This is a vessel. It's a desk. What would you call it? Any furniture is a vessel, according to the Torah's definition. Kaylee means, it doesn't mean a vessel in the sense of container. It means an object. So this is an object. That's called a vessel. What?
It's
an object without a receptacle. That's right. That's, so that's the difference. Okay, the...
The vessel means carrying. It's like a vessel.
Right, but that's not its precise definition of the Hebrew term. The Hebrew term Kaylee means object more than vessel. Okay? So wooden object is not makabel tuma unless it's made to be a receptacle. Okay, the kelim to the tefillah. Ask the Gemara, why do you have to title the kelim? What's after yotiv? You know, the only kohanim touch the vessels and the objects in the base of mikdash. What's the problem? So says Gemara, Nioi mer shema yosham echa min hakelim. I say that potentially there was. This is like a halachic paranoia. I'm afraid that maybe one of the vessels shlohuza was not sprinkled properly with para aduma waters, you know, with waters from the red heifer before yontif, and maybe some point something which was had the tuma of a dead body came into contact with it, and therefore we have to actually now dunk it in the mikvah. Says, well, wait a minute, if that's true, mi'ata nachush l'kulan, let's be suspicious of all vessels. Meaning, what it means is not just to require them to go to the mikveh, all the missions have to go to the mikveh. But if you're afraid that actually one of them came to the contact with tumas meis, so then mikveh is not enough. You have to sprinkle paraduma water on all of them, right? Mikveh doesn't suffice. So Rabbum Barachir, Rabbum Barachir said, you're right. That's not the what we're afraid of. We're afraid of as Ani Oimer Shayosham Echmin Hakohanim. I say there'll be one of the Kohanim Shayotze Darbe Ma'isha, who went out to talk with a woman who was Anida, Al Iske Kino concerning the pair of birds she brought as a carbon. V'Natza Tzinora Shorok, and some saliva spewed mitoch pia from her mouth, al begodav, on his clothes, the timaso, and made him tummy. Okay? And then he went and he touched the vessels. So says the Gemara, okay, but if that's the case, it's the me'ata nachosh l'kula. The halach is, if somebody who's tummy is to come into contact with a nida, touches a vessel, that vessel must go to the mikvah. It doesn't have that part of duma water special, sure, sprinkle on it, but it also has to wait till nightfall. What? Well, he can do his clothes separately. He doesn't have to wear his clothes, but the clothes have to go to the mikvah as well. Right. So when he goes, then those clothes are tummy till nightfall. So why is it saying in our Mishnah that the vessels are tummy till nightfall? Why is it not mentioned? Okay, me'ata not nachush l'kula means let's be concerned that it should have to wait till nightfall. So that's why, you know what, you're right. We're not concerned with any of those things. Those are too remote. Tipat, I'll tell you about a case, where we're not sure that perhaps an impure liquid touched the vessels in the Beit HaMikdash. And of course, an impure liquid other than the saliva of or the body fluids of a person who's a zav, a woman who's a zava, any other beverage which are tummy, only tummy the rabbanon. And since any other tumma beverages are the rabbanon, so therefore it does not require that it stay over till nightfall. So that's why they didn't weren't concerned with that. Okay? Let's go now to the topic of Beis HaMikdash. Tamatim, we learned over there. Safek Mashkin, we have a question of beverages which were tame. Litama tame. That they should be considered tame. In other words, whether we deem these beverages tame or not, we have to be stringent and assume they became tame. However, litame, if our question is whether they defiled something else, in a case of doubt, tahor, we assume it's tahor. So the Gemara is asking a question. Gemara is saying, you're saying, our mission is telling you about a case where we're not sure if a tameh beverage perhaps came into contact with the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash. But the halacha is in any case of insecurity of that sort, since it's a tumah derabbanan, since it's a rabbinic tumah, we're lenient. We say in a case of doubt, it's tahor. So how come they have to dunk all these vessels in the mikvah? True, they don't have to wait till nightfall, because it's only tumah derabbanan. But why do they have to dunk them at all? Says more, the answer which you knew was coming, tamam b'trumah. Where are we lenient when it's a matter of trumah? However, kan b'kodesh, you're talking about holy stuff in the Beis HaMikdash. Chomer hu b'kodesh, by the Beis HaMikdash, we're more severe. Okay, period. Now, new issue. Tani, we learned. Shulchot Shinitba, this is not in the Bavli. It's a big discussion here among the Achronim, whether this is in fact a bona fide Gemara or something here was added in. L'maisa, most of them say it's bona fide, they just make slight changes. Tani, Shulchot Shinitma, the table in the Beis HaMikdash, which held the showbreads, which became Tomei, Matbilin Oso Bismano, you dunk it on its, at its proper time, which is, take out the word Afilu B'Shabbos. That's an interesting thing, explained by the Achronim. The Shulchan became Tomei on Tuesday. Right? The Shulchan Ho and the showbreads became Tomei on Tuesday. Why don't you dunk it in the mikvah right away? So the reason is, why wouldn't you dunk it and wait till Shabbos? Because every Shabbos you took the bread off, but you the entire week you're supposed to leave the bread on. So even though the bread is tummy, it's a higher value in halacha, according to this Tana, who's Rabbi Meir, to leave the bread on till Shabbos in the state of tumah than to take it off in the middle of the week. And therefore you leave it till the time when you're going to change the bread anyway on Shabbos, dunk it in the mikvah on Shabbos between the breads, as opposed to dunk it in the mikvah on Tuesday. Or Wednesday, or whatever it occurs. Alright? Divrei Meir. The Chachomim said it's better to take it to the mikveh immediately. You don't leave it tummy in the Beis HaMikdash. The value of not leaving the table tummy in the Beis HaMikdash overwhelms the value of having the breads on the table constantly, as it says tummy. Ashkechas Oimer. So you come out saying an interesting thing. Al Daiti Ramir, Kun Ramir, Metameh Shnei Luchomim. Two series of breads are going to become tummy. Because if it's a severe enough tumah to make the shulchan tumah, to make the table tumah, it probably is the type of tumah which is going to be tumah till nightfall. So therefore, even though you put in the mikvah, it's still going to be tumah till nightfall. Such as, let's say, a kohen who's a zav touched it, right? So it's tumah till nightfall. So actually, the first set of bread is going to be tumah, because it actually was on the table when the table became tumah. And even the second set of bread, you put on the table on Shabbos, before nightfall is going to become tummy as well. And still Rabbi Meir holds the wait till Shabbos. Nevertheless, I'll die to the Rabbanon, according to the Rabbanon, of course, since you're going to do in the middle of the week, right? You're going to dunk in the middle of the week, so only the bread which is on there now will be tummy. The bread which is on, which is, comes on Shabbos, that bread already will be tar. So that seems Rabbanon are placing more value on diminishing tumah. Says the Gemara, no. I feel Rabbi Yaakov Bar Sisi, Kum Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yaakov Bar Sisi said in front of Yosef, could be I feel a daiti Rameir, even Kor Rameir, ain't a matame alechem il chabilvad. It's the only time Rameir would say to wait till Shabbos might be when only one set of breads will become tame, not where both sets of bread will become tame. And he part there, and perhaps we can resolve the Rameir is talking about specifically Shanitma. It says you're besufik mashkin, but the could be even mashkin itself. when it became tummy with the tumah derabbanan, such as tummy beverages. Because then, again, it's not tummy till nightfall. It's only tummy until you dunk it in the mikveh. And then, only one set of bread becomes tummy, the set of bread which was on the table when it became tummy. So it's possible, says Rabbi Yaakov Bar Sisi, that Rabbi Meir also would agree there was a tumah derabbanan which came into contact with the table that we would dunk it immediately, in order to prevent two sets of bread becoming tummy. But it only went to Tumah Darabanan, where anyway only one set of bread becomes tummy. So then he would say, and besides it's just a Tumah Darabanan, of course, he would say, wait till Shabbos, better to dunk it on Shabbos than to take off the bread in the middle of the week. Okay? It's interesting, machlokas, again, not brought down the Bavli. Pamachas ibilas amenorah. Now one time they dunked the menorah in the mikveh. Amud Stokim and the Sadducees, they said, ha! Rul Prushim, look at these Pharisees. Matpilim Galgal Chama. They take the sun and dunk it in the mikveh. Now the question is, what was bothering the Tzedokim? It's not clear, you know, what was really bothering them. So the many interpretations given here, kind of some interesting ones and some strange ones. But I like the one I saw in the Yerushalmi Mavur, which says that the Tzedokim hold there's no such thing as Tumah Derabanan. Because they didn't believe in the Rabbanans. That was the whole point of the stoking. So therefore they said, there's no such thing as a menorah becoming, there's no such thing as a menorah becoming tamei from a Tumah Derabanan. So when they took this and they dunked in the mikvah, so then, was a fruitless gesture, that's when they made a mockery of it. One other interpretation, which I didn't like as much, which is sounds valid as well, is that, the menorah also, the Tzedokim hold that the menorah has to be burning all the time. The Pnei Moshe says this. The menorah has to be burning all the time. And it's so therefore it's like the Shulchan. It's better, and therefore it's better not to toivel it, even though it's a tzitameh, in order to make sure that it's constantly burning. We don't hold that way. We hold that it has to burn through the night, but does not have to burn during the day, and therefore we would hold that it's can be put in the mikvah during the day. Okay? Tamati, we learned over there. Nichnasu lishkas hakelim. Every morning, when they entered Beis Hamikdash, they went in and they took it, went into the office where they kept the implements. And they took out 93 vessels of silver, and vessels of gold. Why 93? So said, because it says 93 times the name of God, in the last three prophets. The prophets who prophesied at the time that the second temple was built. Chagai Eschaya Malachi. So to commemorate that, in the second temple, they had 93 vessels in order to correspond to that book, in those books in the Tanakh. Am Rabbi Chunar El-Chazer Chishavtim, I counted them. Ve'enim El-Shmonim V'Shlosha. There are only 83 names of Hashem in these three books. Now, the Achronim, you see there's a lot of commentary on the page. They're all trying to go through the count. We, thank God, have no desire to go through the count, right? So therefore, we're just going to trust that they're not 93, they're only 83, and we're not going to try and even figure out why they thought they were 93. We'll leave that to the people who like writing in fine print. So in any event, what corresponding to those 83 times that it says the name of God, Chagai Eschaya Malachi, there are connected Shmoni Mishosh Chosom Shkosub Ezra. Ezra had a document on which he got signatories who pledged themselves to frumkeit and to be very holy and to do the right thing and not to intermarry and stuff like that. A whole bunch of pledges. And there are 83 people who signed on that pledge. So that corresponds to 83 times that the name of God is mentioned in Chagai Eschaya Malachi. What? Yeah, there was money. There was money with strange hands. I don't know if there was any money with strange hands. So in any event, why should I call Echad v'Echad? But each one who signed this document, Yachid Shmosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he was showing the oneness of the name of God with Chesim and signing that way. Now, if that's the case, only 83 mentions. So how do we get up to 93? So he's 93 vessels. He's the boy Meymar. So one wanted to say, like the day which there is the most korbanos. Tamid is a korban tzibur, and I'm talking about the most korbanos tzibur. And one of the first day of Sukkot, Kenegad Yudgimel Purim, when there were 13 bulls, Yudal Kvasim, and 14 sheep, that's 27. Ve'elim Shleim, and 2 rams, that's 29. Besor Echot, and one chatos, one goat for a chatos, and that's how much is that? 30. So here, and therefore it's 30, and each carbon requires 3 vessels, one for receiving the blood, another one for the mincha, which covers each carbon, and a third for the libation of the wine, nisuchayayin. So that's altogether 30 times 3 is 90, plus the carbon tamid, which is another 3. So that's 93. Now it happens to be that there, you know, it says this is often the Shari Torah Eretz Yisrael. You have to take out 2 vessels because the Soyer Echad did not have flour for the mincha or wine come with it. And instead of them, you put in another 2, one for the pancakes of the Kohen Gadol, which were brought in the morning and the afternoon. So we had one vessel which was used both the morning and afternoon, and one for the water libation, because it's Sukkot, and it was a water libation on Sukkot. So that corresponds to 93 vessels. So since one day a year, they required 93 vessels for all the korbanos, so every day they took out 93 vessels. That's how they worked it. Okay? Rabbi Shila the Kfar Tamas of Hashem Rabbi Yochanan said, time of the Rabbi Lezer. Now getting back to Rabbi Lezer holds that all the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash became Tomei, except for the Mizbach HaZov, except for the 2 altars. So what's his logic? So it says, time of Rabbi Lezer, it's Pisoso Zov Tar. It says you should cover the inner Mizbeach with gold, and it says there, although the Pasuk is not brought down in Yerushalmi here verbatim, it says there, Eskagov Eskirosov, its roof and its walls. Now that's a funny language. You don't say about a desk, the roof of the desk, or the walls of the desk. So since it says the roof and the walls, the Torah is regarding it, even though it was a vessel, an object, as if it is part of the ground, right? HaTorah Karoso So Karka. The Torah calls the ground, that's why it has that look of ground that doesn't receive too much. Ad Kedum Mizbech HaZav. Until now, we only see in this verse the golden Mizbech for the incense. Mizbech HaOla Minayin. I know it's true also about the copper Mizbech for the Korbanos themselves. V'dinu. As the Gemara says, it's a logic. Umay, it's like a Kavachomer. My Mizbech HaZav, the gold Mizbech, that was tiny and really could be carried very easily. Shu'am al-amo is 1 cubit by 1 cubit. You say it's like the ground. Mizbech HaOla, the larger Mizbech for the Korbanos, Shu'chamesh HaChamesh is just 5 by 5 cubits, low kol shekain, it certainly is considered to be like the ground, which is a funny Kavachomer. And the Gemara knows that. So the Gemara comes along and says, it's the boy Meir, so those who want to say it's not a Kavachomer, but rather it's a Gzer Shav, it's a parallel term. Ravua, Ravua. They're both called square with the same term, Ravua. Makan Karka, and therefore we say, just like this one is ground, so this one's ground, and neither of them can become Tomei. Rabbi Lezer said, time of the Rabbanon. What's the logic of Rabbanon, who say that even the Mizbeach could theoretically become Tomei, if not for the fact that it's made out of wood? What's their logic? A Mizbeach ate, it says in Pesukim Yecheskel, the Mizbeach was wood. Shalosh Amos Gova, 3 Amos High, Vegomer, etc. HaTorah, the Torah, now it's not actually Torah, it's the Navi, but the Navi calls it Mitalto. It calls it something carrying. Now, here again, part of the Pesuk is not here, but the critical part of the Pesuk is, according to the Pei Moshe bring down, is that it says that the Navi Yecheskel calls the Mizbeach a shulchan, a table. You know, they say that you never sit on a table because the table is like a Mizbeach, but this is the opposite. A Mizbeach is called a table, right? Since a Mizbeach is called a table there, so therefore, just like a table, something portable, so the Navi is relating to the Mizbeach as if it's something portable as well. So that's our button hole that theoretically the Mizbeach can become something, right? I could do Mizbech Ola. Well, that's fine. Let's say about the outer Mizbech for the Karbonos. Mizbech Hazav Minai, what about the gold Mizbech for the incense? Vedino. So here again, we try and use logic. It's a Kavachom in the other direction. In Mizbech Ola, if the outer Mizbech, Shuhelhe, which is 5 by 5 cubits, Tatam Remetato, you say it's portable. Mizbech Hazav, the gold Mizbech, Shu'al Amma, which is only Nama Amma, Lo Koshke is not certainly that it's portable. And of course, this, since we don't want to use a kal v'chomer exclusively, is may be siboy mer. Those who want to say ravua tekzer shavak neshe mitzupin. Chachomim say that it's considered to be coated. So says the Gemara. Now lotzi bushu omed machmosahu is not a coating which stands. It's not a coating which stands on its own, right? So if it stands on its the two ways of learning this, the way that most of the Mefarshim learn it, this is going on Chachomim. I want to learn it at, even though it says Chachomim Neshim Mitzubim, I want to learn that it's going on Rabbi Elezer. Rabbi Elezer holds that even though it was coated wood, it still is Mekabel Tuma, right? So I think that this is the way to learn it. Although, again, it goes against all of the Mefarshim, but it reads easier. Okay, so this is the way I want to read it. Lo tzipusha machmasu, if the coating is considered, should be considered to be subordinate to the wood, because it's whole held up by the wood. Since it's held up by the wood, so it's not significant. And therefore, it shouldn't be considered to be a metal vessel. How can Rabbi Lezer consider that to be metal vessels, that they're makabel tuma? It's the metal is subordinate to the wood, which supports it. So it says more. Rabbi Shimon Levi, Shem Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Shimon Levi, and Rabbi Yehoshua, Govi Dinar Gordoinin Havaba. No, it's thick like a coin, like a Dinar Gordoinin, a thick coin, and that thickness is sufficient that I consider to be a metal vessel because of the substance of the gold itself. Another way of learning it, Rabbi Law said, Lemlachto, if it's necessary for the use of the mizbeach to be metal, ain't omen machmosu. You can't consider it subordinate to the wood. Meaning, you can't burn incense or korbanos on wood. You have to have the metal coating, right? So you can't consider the metal coating subordinate to the wood. It's got to be considered distinct. And that's why Rabbi Lezer held that they were makabel tuma, despite the fact that they're only coated wood. Okay? Asakai d'amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish. That's what Shimon Lakish says. Vasisam is bech. Nobody knows how to read this line. I'm going to give my suggestion. He's really giving this according to the trop in the pasuk. The pasuk's trop, the way he laid it, is Vasisa Mizbeach Miktar Ketores. Vasisa is a mercha, Ketores Mizbeach is a tifcha, Miktar is a munach, and Ketores is a snachta. So it's really like two different phrases. Vasisa Mizbeach, comma, make an altar, Miktar Ketores. So the place to bring up the incense. So why is it two separate phrases, right? It's not one long phrase. Ela miktar ketores. It's a separate phrase, right? It's not one long, but two separate phrases. Hamizbeach hoya maktir es ketores. The mizbeach held up the metal, which was makdir the ketores. So it actually was two separate components. There's the mizbeach, which is the wooden part, and then there's the miktar ketores part, which is the metal coating on which you put the ketores. So that's our belezo, despite the fact that it was coated wood, nonetheless it can become tummy. Okay? Says the Gemara, v'yeh ketav l'shiosi leilech ulaniach. Now, really going back again, we're saying, why is it, yes, okay, we'll be there in a second. So it says, "V'yeke tavla shi'asuya le'ilchaniach." Anyway, it should be like a tablet which is made to carry and transport. And lokein amar Rabbi Amishem Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Then Rabbi Amishem named Rabbi Shimon Lakish. Hashulchan lama tami. Why was the table? Why could the table in the base of Midrash come tami? Loin neshmotino so marino so loli regolim. Because they used to take it out and show it to the pilgrims. So they actually moved it. So that's true when it's made to be portable. But the Mizbeach, they weren't made to be portable. So how come they're Mekabel Tuma? Okay, in other words, we said that the Kohen Rabbanan, the Mizbeach could be Mekabel Tuma. Why could it be Mekabel Tuma? It's stationary. Anything which is made to be stationary is not Mekabel Tuma. Right? So it said a wooden vessel is made to be stationary. So it says, Gemara, you know what? I don't want to keep them waiting. Maybe we'll come back after. If you come back for a couple minutes after Mara, we'll finish after Mara. It was not connected to the ground. They used to fill it up with dirt. The first one was Be'achazov, had probably a wooden piece at the bottom. Secondly, even the Mizbach HaNechoshes, which they used to fill up with dirt at every stop,
yeah.
But the structure itself remained separate. If you filled up the underneath of this desk with dirt, it would still remain a distinct desk, right?
Yeah, right.
So how is it connected to the ground?
I was wondering, I thought there was some sort of way it was attached to the ground.
Only when they built it in the Beis HaMikdash. Until then, it was completely separate from the ground.
What they did, they built it up from the ground and
basically... It was like cement.
Okay, so
they poured it in.
Poured it in and affixed it to...
No.
So then it makes sense.
That was connected to the ground, but when it was...
It came up from the ground.
Right. But previous to that, it was a portable piece of copper. Actually, I shouldn't say portable. It was a portable wood frame coated by copper, which was placed on the ground. Actually, it was placed on a mound of dirt every stop where the Mishkan came to rest.
Well, whatever. They literally built it up from the ground with concrete. Well,
right.
That's concrete. I mean, it's not porous. And that they built it up from the dirt on the ground, which hardened.
Right.
And as it hardened, they affixed to it this vessel, which they transported.
No. They discarded it at that point. How did it start? They buried it. The two separate mizbeach in the altar in the Beis HaMikdash was separate and distinct. They no longer retained the copper mizbeach. Our mishnah story about the copper mizbeach, which was in use until they entered the Beis HaMikdash. That's what we're talking about. Okay, and that one, the Rabbi Lezer holds, it did not become tameh because it's a special halacha that even though it was not considered to be part and parcel of the ground, technically speaking, it had the status like connected to the ground.
Status,
right? Because it's described as having a roof and walls, right? And the question which we're asking now is why otherwise it was metame.
Right.
Because otherwise, so what? It's still like Chacham say, it's a wooden vessel coated. And that Rabbi Lez was justifying the whole time by saying that the coating is distinct and therefore would have been metame if not for the fact that it has the special status as connected to the ground. Okay? So now, the Gemara's question is, nine lines to the bottom. And we'll start, we stopped in the middle before. Okay? Now, the halacha is, of course, that something which is portable is made, is makabo tuma. It can become tummy. Something which is stationary is not, can't become tummy. So now, says the Marvie Katavlish Yasui Leilchaniach, let it be considered to be portable and let it be makabo tuma because it's portable. I think there's a word missing here. It should, or maybe it said in astonishment. Let me change the inflection of it without changing words. So why do you want to say, why Rabbi Lezer said it's tummy word, not for fact that it has a special status as if it's connected to the ground? Because it must be, because it's made to be portable. But that's not true. Why was the table in the Beis HaMikdash tameh? It's only because it was portable, because they would take it out and marino someone show it lowly regarding to the people who came to the pilgrimage festivals. And this didn't stay in spots. Right, it stayed in one spot, so how could it become tummy? It wasn't portable. Now, I want to point out the mizbeah, the shulchan, could not become tummy unless it's portable, because it was a wooden vessel. And wooden vessels can only become tummy if they're portable. Now, you might, the difference between the shulchan and the mizbeah, though, is a critical one, which we mentioned before. A shulchan, the table, could serve as a table to hold bread, even if it wasn't coated with metal, right? So therefore, the coating of the table was really considered to be obviously subordinate to the table status as wood. So therefore, were the table not portable, it would not have been... Right, the metal's in dormant. Right, good word. So therefore, the table would not have become tummy except for the fact that it was portable. Now, on the other hand, we're saying that the Mizbeach was Mekabel Tuma, despite the fact that the Mizbeach was Mekabel Tuma, because of its status as having a metal covering, which was independent because it was not a dormant, because you couldn't burn anything on the couldn't burn anything on top of it,
right.
if not for the fact that it had a separate middle covering. But Rabbanan nevertheless hold that the Rabbanan hold that it's not Mekabel Tuma because it's covered, right? One second. It's covered. Right, it's a covered vessel. Oh, no, so question. Yeah. Question on. The question is really going back. That's why I started saying before Mariv, I forgot. This question is really going back in time. We have this very often in Yerushalmi. It's taking a different tack. But it's according to Rabbi Lezer, we said the reason why it's Mekabel Tuma is because it has a separate coating which is distinct from the bottom that we said previously. But now Yerushalmi is kind of taking a step back and is saying, well, let's look at it from its wooden angle. From its wooden angle, could it be Mekabel Tuma? L'chora na, it would seem not. It couldn't be Mekabel Tuma because it's not made to move, right? Right? So if it's not made to move, so therefore it's not portable, can't be Mekabel Tuma, right? V'yetor, v'lom mutame. And on that, again, Yushami says the same thing again it said before from a different angle. Amrei Amana, Amana said, Kai Ditznina Tamon, a very interesting parallel, a Yushami-type parallel. We learn a Mishnah, it's a straight Mishnah, obscure Mishnah in Masech Tekelim. All Masech Tekelim is obscure. So Masech Tekelim has a Mishnah which says, Sholosh Mashpelos, the three types of baskets. And without going into the details of the three types of baskets, the first type of basket mentioned in the Mishnah is a basket made to take out garbage. And it says there, a basket made to take out garbage is considered to be, can become Tomei if Zav, a person who's a Zav, has a mission, or a Zava, or a Zanita, sits on it. Even though most baskets are not made for sitting. But the thing is, when you pile it high with garbage, so then people do sit on it. So a basket which is not made for sitting cannot become Tomei if somebody sits on it. Because we have principle, any type of object where if somebody sits on it, we say, get off, we want to use it. So it can't become Tomei if a person sits on it. But the case of a vessel which contains garbage, when it's full of garbage, they allow people to sit on it. Nobody cares. So therefore it could be Tomei Tumas Medrash.
It's garbage.
Right. But the thing is,
which inherently could include Tomei.
But it's not because the garbage is Tomei. It's because the guy sitting on it, look it. The guy sitting on it makes it Tomei, and not just the garbage Tomei, but it makes the actual basket Tomei.
But the basket's for garbage.
But the basket now serves as a seat. A basket full of garbage equals a seat. I'm not making this up. The Mishnah says this.
Okay.
Now, the parallel is like this. Look at the parallel. The parallel is very, very cute. And Rabbi Zira explains the parallel. Amar Rabbi Zira, said, Nesh mishtam shibo gav chavileha. Because you use it in a combination, meaning basket plus garbage equals seat. So too, by the Mizbeach, the combination Mishtam Shiva Gabi Chavila, so too here, the wooden part plus the metal part equals something which can be Mekabel Tuma. So really, the Yushami is saying the same thing it said before from a different angle. Just like you have, before we said, the metal is distinct, and therefore, the metal, it gives the status of a metal object. Metal objects can become Tomei independently of regardless of whether they're moved or not, regardless of portable or not. So to here, this Mizbeach, of course, since the metal is distinct, it would be a Mekabel Tuma, regardless of its wood underneath. Now, Yushami is saying the same thing from a slightly different nuance. Yushami is saying, to attack from the question of the wood is not portable, and wood which is not portable is not Mekabel Tuma. So the Yushami says, yes, but just like we see over there, basket, which can't be Mekabel Tuma sitting on it, plus garbage, now does become receive the status of a seat, and it is Mekabel Tuma from somebody sitting on it. So to here, wooden layer, which can't be Mekabel Tuma, plus the metal layer, which gives it its different status, together makes it suitable to be Mekabel Tuma, and that's it's Mekabel Tuma, even though it's not portable. You might not like it, but you got to give the Yerushalmi an A+ for creativity on that one. Right? On that happy note, we will finish Masechta Chagiga.